You're listening to the MoneyWeb SAFM Market Update Podcast.
The first of the companies that gave us results that we'll be reflecting on today was the First Rand business. They gave us their full year results for the financial year ended June 2024. I have the privilege of speaking to First Rand's new CEO, Mary Vilagazi, about the numbers and trying to make sense of the performance. Good evening, Mary. Lovely to speak to you again. Your first reflections as a CEO.
I think for the past year, the business has delivered incredible results given the difficult macroeconomic environment we've had to navigate, and given the challenges that our UK subsidiary faces there with a review that's happening in the finance sector. We've had to set aside a very big provision. So if I look at the earnings that we've delivered being up 4%, I think in an environment where we've seen such a steep increase in retail credit impairments and all these other headwinds that I've explained, you know, we feel pretty good about the outcome that we've been able to deliver at that 4% earnings, particularly because our return on equity, it's at 20.3% within our stated range of 18 to 22%, and pleasingly we're able to increase the dividend to our shareholders by 8%. And if I strip out the impact of the provision and really look at operational performance, our franchises really did well to deliver earnings growth of 10% up for the year.
Mary, when we look at those numbers in greater detail, and I'm just looking at some of the headline figures and actually any real metric that you use to measure the performance of the business, the theme that comes through is a lot about consistency and discipline. What's the secret cocktail in a climate where a consumer's constrained and you've got such a wide operation globally as well? How do you balance the discipline to achieve this level of consistency?
Yeah, so I think we have, you know, well-established frameworks. We often talk about it. It's basically the frameworks that guide how we utilize financial resources. We call them FRM. So those disciplines are really well embedded in the businesses, you know. So I suppose you need the people who are going to make sure they use the frameworks and are sufficiently discerning and make the right decisions, you know. So I think it's not just the frameworks and the tools that make it happen. I guess it's also the experience we have in the business. And I guess the consistency part, I mean, I think a lot of the decisions you make in banking, you know, I think you have to see them through different cycles, you know. So I think this consistency comes from us making calls that sometimes are quite different to what our peers are making. And I guess when we've got the conviction, we see them through. You know, we have an approach that we've taken around how we manage our endowment, that in this particular financial year comes at an opportunity cost of about 1.5 billion. But, you know, it's actually a strategy that's delivered well for our shareholders when rates were low. You know, so we don't look at it and say, okay, we abandon it just because we don't like the outcome now. So our ability to stick through with our calls. And another strategic call that I can point out is really our decision in 2021, post-COVID, when we started lending again outside of our customer base, we made a decision to not to pull back from high-risk customers and focus on low- to medium-risk customers. Because remember, high-risk customers, if I come in and I have a high-risk profile, the bank can still loan you money, they just price you up. But we decided to forego that margin from high-risk customers. And that strategy to stick with low- to medium-risk customers who have the capacity to lend, I think has held us in good stead. As much as the impairments are up significantly in this period, I think had we not had that strategy, you know, the experience would be a lot more adverse. Mm. And what that has allowed us to do is continue lending. So we haven't been in and out of the market. We've consistently just stuck to our appetite. What has happened over the last 2 years or 18 months or so, with rates being high and inflation high as well, is that we saw reduced affordability, you know. So customers did not have the level of affordability as much as they are low or medium risk customers. So we saw, you know, I think we saw a reduction in the loans, but not because we've necessarily cut on appetite, but just because of affordability pressures. And of course, where we see concerning trends emerge, as we are seeing with these debt review processes, you know, we do respond appropriately. But overall, I think we've stuck with supporting our clients during this challenging period. What we did not foresee is rates to be at this high level for such a long period of time. So, but I think given what how the cycle is playing out, you know, we're still reasonably quite confident and comfortable with the credit decisions we have made.
Mary, you touched on the UK business at the start of our conversation, and obviously a 3.3 billion rand provision is no small amount. Take me through what's happening there with the business, why the provision's been raised. Is it a once-off provision? Are there other things you're kind of concerned about there? Just give me a bit more color there, please.
Yeah, so the provision relates to, I guess, the uncertainty we are facing in the UK. So we are awaiting clarity on where the UK FCA, and the FCA is basically the conduct regulator in the UK, they announced that they're going to be looking at the motor finance sector in January this year. And they appointed what they call a skilled person to review the practices of the sector. Now, in 2021, the FCA had reviewed the practices of the sector. And at the time, they said, okay, they going forward, you know, the use of discretionary commission practices should be taken away. So this is where the dealer has got the ability, you know, to flex the interest rate for the deal that they get into the customer. So basically at the time they said, this practice might result in consumer detriment. Okay, and then like Australia, they looked at it and said, okay, going forward, we no longer will permit this. In West Bank, in South Africa, we also followed suit, even though in South Africa, in the market, that practice still exists. Okay, so that's really the origin of this. And when the FCA came with ruling out and coming up with new regulations that were forward-looking, some consumers then sat back and said, okay, does this mean that I had a worse deal before these regulations? And so we've seen a lot of legal activity that has come about since then. We've also been taken, we've taken a lot of these cases to court, and I think the court has found in our favor in more than 70% of the cases. So Jimmy, it's like it's quite a complex matter. We have to just allow the FCA process, I think, to bring it to a conclusion. Their intervention was really helpful because I think, you know, there were legal cases all over the place, and that also is not sustainable. So we welcome this review. It is quite a sizable amount of money that we've set aside, I think, in rands and in pounds terms. And hopefully there'll be more clarity in the next year and that, you know, that we don't actually have to utilize it. We think it's a conservatively struck provision.
Very conservative approach towards managing a business. Mary, I want to look at the NII, the net interest income side of the business. That's a huge component of the business, and it was quite a bit in today's SENS announcement around how you think through that part of the business and the methodology in that. And you touched on this to say that interest rates haven't exactly gone according to plan the way you had initially mapped them out. How is that influencing your strategy when it comes to NII, understanding that we could potentially be in for interest rate cuts as early as next week?
Yes. So for this past financial year, NII was up 10%. And I mentioned earlier on that we have an ALM strategy that we know that through the cycle has created value for our shareholders. But in this particular year, it came at an opportunity cost because rates were higher than where we had, let me just loosely say it, where we had hedged. Okay, so when rates come down, obviously that strategy starts helping us on the part that we have hedged. So this year, I think we say NII is up 10%, but it would have been 13.5% higher. And as we look forward to a cycle where rates are coming down, as I said, we want to have the support from the part of the endowment that we've hedged, but you know, the part of the endowment where we haven't hedged, you know, that and NII is going to come down. But I think we also see that, you know, our book mix, our portfolio mix is tilting more towards corporate and commercial. And I mean, I guess those, when we do those infrastructure deals, they are generally lower margin business than a retail heavy strategy. So that's also just part of where some of our NII softening that we guided looking forward will come through. But, you know, I think we have seen healthy growth in deposit franchise and we are still looking forward to a year. Even though retail is under pressure, I think there are still pockets where we are able to lend. So hopefully we get a bit more support than perhaps what seems to be an overly cautious outlook at the beginning of the year. But we are expecting to see rate cuts start to come through, hopefully at the September and the November meetings of the SARB, and I think another one early next year. So all of that should hopefully bring some relief to consumers and households. Although even with three cuts of 25 basis points or just 75 basis points, repo rates will be at 7.5. I think, Jim, it's quite important to remember that that is still much higher than the pre-pandemic levels. Eh? Mm. So I think it's not the consumer completely out of the woods, but I think more relief.
Speaking of relief, Mary, you and I caught up in October of last year as you were announced as the CEO. We spoke about a variety of things, including just kind of the culture taking over from Alan and your responsibilities and your ideas going forward. How are you feeling at this point? Are you feeling relieved that the transition has been sort of smooth and seamless? And are you settled in quite nicely?
Yes, I think earlier on, when I wrote to employees, I commended them for not having lost any momentum. And I think that the second half of the year performance was particularly good. And I said, you know, that is only ever an outcome of when everybody pulls together, I think, to make all the kind of leadership transitions the business has had to contend with. And I think, you know, the outcome really is that of a seamless handing over of the baton. So I said to the leadership team, they do deserve a podium performance for how well the transitions have been managed. So Jamie, feeling quite comfortable and really, I suppose, excited about the prospects of what South Africa in particular, I think, can offer in the years ahead.
A strong performance, but an even stronger team behind that performance. It's quite the lovely story to tell. I think we'll leave it at that for now, Mary. We wish you the best of luck into the new financial year, and we will certainly catch up as the year goes on. That was Mary Vilagazi, CEO at First Rand, reflecting on the group's numbers and the performance that was the 2024 year.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb SAFM Market Update podcast, uploaded weekdays at 7 p.m. For more MoneyWeb podcasts, go to moneyweb.co.za or the app and follow MoneyWeb News for daily updates.